This is Fresh Air. I've always fantasized that being a restaurant or movie critic would be the perfect job. What doesn't enter into my reveries are all the bad movies and lousy meals that would come with the territory. My guest, Jeff Weinstein, is food critic for The Village Voice. Although he'll cover the latest downtown trendy restaurant, he also writes about the role food plays in our daily lives. Weinstein was a juvenile diabetic, and he says his interest in food began when he was a kid.
When I was young, my mother had to measure and weigh everything I ate, had to think very carefully balancing meals, and had to incorporate my diet into the rest of the family's diet. And I was also, insulin makes you hungry.
Does it?
Yeah. People don't talk about that very much, but it when it comes on, you get an appetite that is overwhelming sometimes. And when I was younger, I often felt hungry.
Would you say, is it cravings that you get?
Yeah, you get a craving for food, and you have to satisfy it. I think that all of this together, the kind of consciousness of the importance of food and the fact that I had to eat on time and eat carefully, made me both anxious about it and interested in it.
I would think as a diabetic, though, there are certain things you just can't eat without paying some kind of consequence for it.
Well, I eat everything.
Do you?
I just have to be very careful about how much of it I eat. I taste everything, certainly. It's a question of balance and timing more than a question of what you eat. I eat sugar. I eat fat. I don't like eating large amounts of it. I'm eating less meat now, but I have to I love meat. I love the taste of it, but I think it's better for me to eat less of it. And I sometimes tell people that if they're interested. They may not be.
Right. Tell me a little bit about the food that you grew up with. Maybe not so much the food that was prepared especially for you, but I think for children and for parents, and I'm speaking here very personally, food is a very loaded issue. And I know I grew up in a white Anglo-Saxon Protestant family. My husband is Jewish. And the approach to food is entirely different. I mean, the food on the plate that I grew up with didn't touch. The food on the plate that he grew up with was piled high with stuff.
That's a wonderful image. My father was Jewish. My mother was not, but converted to marry. What that meant is that she tried very hard to learn how to cook Jewish with some success. Uh-huh. But both my father and my mother liked both to cook and to eat was Italian food. We lived in Brooklyn. This is in the 50s. So if there was real cooking going on, it was either fresh seafood, which my father loved, or really, really good Sicilian-type red sauce cooking, because all of our neighbors were Italian, and we all ate with them and had a good time. The other thing, though, that influenced me was we went out to eat a lot, especially my father liked to take my brother and myself just as a way of being with us. And he sometimes did business in restaurants. In fact, he ran one, but this is before I was born. And they were all Italian restaurants. And I'm afraid I have I'm imprinted with stuffed artichokes and grilled veal chops, so I can't get them out of my head.
So food was not necessarily a loaded issue, but it was a communal family time.
There were always tensions. If my mother and father were fighting, it was clearly being fought over dinner at the dinner table. If my father was working late, he wasn't there. One of the things that was interesting that I've forgotten about is that the 50s, which is when I grew up, a very interesting time for women who were trained mostly to cook and to cook from scratch to move into using canned, especially frozen food. And I remember the day my mother finally got a freezer. And we went to the new Waldbaum's, this is in 56 or 57, and bought every kind of frozen food that we could afford and tried them out. And then TV dinners. We were the first.
And the rest is history, of course.
The rest is history. TV dinners trained me about the price you pay for convenience and the promise of the unfulfilled promise of the capitalist dream.
My guest is Jeff Weinstein. He's the food critic for The Village Voice. Some of his columns have been collected in a book called Learning to Eat. More after a short break. This is Fresh Air. Food critic Jeff Weinstein is my guest. You don't believe in the kind of rating system. You don't give restaurants 4 stars. And you even say in your book that you don't even like to use adjectives when you're talking about a restaurant.
Well, yeah, I may be changing my mind about some of this because people... Not about ratings. I don't think I'll ever be forced to rate a restaurant.
What's wrong with that?
Well,
what would you say?
I think it appeals to the need of people to be told what to do. And I don't think that it's my job to perpetuate a kind of you know and I don't attitude. I want people to enjoy what I write, to you know, I'm not going to use the word empowerment, but to empower people to go out and figure stuff out for themselves, to be critical, to enjoy what a restaurant is about. Now, I do evaluate restaurants, but not with a rating. The rating seems to... Why are highly rated restaurants, the ones that are given four... I don't know what the ratings are here, four or five toques, you know, chef's hats or stars or forks, whatever garbage the newspaper wants to use.
Well, it's a shorthand, isn't it?
Yeah, but why are they always French? Why, you know, why, or almost always, maybe one hotsy-totsy Italian, why are they always expensive? What does the rating mean? Hmm. I've found in talking to other very serious colleagues, very good and serious other restaurant critics, that even sometimes they're a little confused about what goes into a rating, what proportion is service and atmosphere, what proportion is food, what proportion is satisfaction. Ratings tend to guarantee satisfaction.
Well, I would think, too, if you have a rating system, then no one's going to read your writing. And it sounds like you're more interested in the writing.
That's the second part of it. I think that I've never proposed myself as a rater. Mm-hmm. I'm a writer. And people, I understand. I like ratings. I mean, I look at the stars. You know, I mean, everybody does. It appeals to something really silly. But I don't think that's a good way for people to either be instructed about where to eat. You know, luckily, we also have little boxes with information. That's very important information. And if they read what I write, I hope, I mean, I eat three times in a restaurant mm-hmm. before I write about it, if it's a big restaurant. And I will evaluate the food. And I will tell people what may be better than, you know, what's better than what isn't on the menu.
What do you look for, though? And if you come across a restaurant that you think is very good. Mm-hmm. What qualifications?
Well, first, it's a gut feeling that I'm being. It's hospitality is the for me one of the most important things. Not just if somebody's smiling at me when I walk in, but a feeling like somebody wants to feed people, mm-hmm. wants to open a restaurant, make people happy through cooking. You can feel it. Very often you can feel it. Sometimes you can't. Sometimes you're surprised.
And you can usually feel that rather quickly, don't you think?
Yeah, I think people know. They know people are very smart, and they know when they're being taken advantage of. They also are very smart and know when they're being genuinely welcomed, not just for their pocketbooks. You know, I know that feeling now, mm-hmm. and it's a treasure. Now, if it's backed up by real food, you know, it's nice to have the feeling, and if you can't eat it, it's not as much fun. But if you have a combination of the two, then you're in good shape.
So you really start with the feeling, the feeling of comfortableness that people like to mm-hmm. cook, they want to feed you,
right.
they want.
That's always connected to competence. Mm-hmm. And if a restaurant is incompetent, either in the front of the house with the waiters and the people who greet you at the door, or in the kitchen, no amount of hospitality is going to work. And I find that the two are usually connected.
I'm wondering, do you get, as a restaurant critic, the sort of restaurant critic's version of writer's block, where you kind of just plain lose your appetite? Your taste buds just aren't as sharp as they sometimes are?
Yeah, no, and it's once a year it happens to me. I get overwhelmed. I don't want another meal. I can't eat it. I want it fast. I can't bear the idea of dealing with another waiter, waitress, table check situation, and I take a week off.
Is that right?
If I can afford it. And the newspaper understands that. They're very good about it. But I can't do that too often. Most of the time, I figure it's a great job. You have to eat anyway. Let's do it. But a writer's block is another problem, actual writer's block. The writing is many years as I've been doing it, and it's 20 years now, it's still a total torture to sit down and to consider the reader, but not consider the reader too much, to try to satisfy yourself, to make a deadline, and to make sure that you're really careful about it. It's a tremendous responsibility. You can damage a restaurant in ways that you never even imagined. So you've got to be careful.
If you feel you're going to have that kind of effect, perhaps you even see a restaurant that's struggling. Mm-hmm. Do you just keep your mouth shut?
Yeah, sure. Also, in New York, you don't review a restaurant that's too small because you will overwhelm them with business and do as much damage that way as you can by panning. What you do in that case is you link them, little ones, together. And so it's like cutting the thousands of people that might go because they read you, which is lovely. But it cuts it down into a, Chicago grew. I once suggested, in fact, that, as a joke, of course, that people with last names that began from A to E should go on Monday, from F to, you know, et cetera. It didn't work.
I often play games with friends, not games, but just talk about memorable meal experiences, things that...
This is the reason I write about food. It's connected to everything you do, everything you feel. It's not a little pleasure that's on the side of important stuff. I wish it were on the front page of every newspaper instead of somewhere in the so-called women's pages. It's not little. The fact that I recommend restaurants, to tell you the truth, is sometimes just an excuse to write about why I think food is important. And sometimes my columns are not only about restaurants. They are about memory. They are about love and love and food connection. They are about mutual responsibility. I mean, everybody, you know, if a world can't feed people and can't feed them with pleasure, there's no, you know, then it's failing. And I think that that's happening in a lot of where we live. And everything I like about living and everything I think is important can be connected to food. And even at its even as a metaphor. But I think actually it's more than a metaphor. It's real. And I like that it brings, you know, you look at an apple, you look at an orange, you look at anything, just a little thing. And if you look at it hard enough and you figure out who made it, where did it come from, how did it get to you, what will you do with it, the whole world starts entering into food.
Jeff Weinstein is food critic for The Village Voice. This is Fresh Air.